You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
5 minutes after 10, as promised, we are going to be hanging out this hour with the Mayor of Cape Town, Mayor Patricia de Lille, who's here with me in our Cape Talk studios in Cape Town, and you can take part in this conversation throughout. Give us a call and engage the Mayor of your city, and quite frankly, not just of your city, because what happens in Cape Town matters to the entire country. In many ways, as I said this morning, Cape Town is a microcosm of some of the biggest challenges that we have in the rest of the country as well. So Cape Town's challenges are South African challenges, and they are interlinked. And so I want to be in conversation about a whole range of issues. And just hold your horses, please. The mayor doesn't need my protection from tough questions. I will at some point ask her about some of the issues in relation to the DC processes and the DA, etc. But to be clear up front, when I ask the mayor to come on, it is in the first instance to talk about the questions in relation to the water crisis, apartheid spatial planning in this particular city, the fact that so many people in terms of public transportation find it very hard to be able to not spend a large chunk of their wages or salary to travel from Bonteheuvel to come and work here for some of you in Newlands. And those are real everyday material issues that affect many, many of the residents in this particular city. So her to-do list, her inbox, everything from her personal political survival to trying to create better conditions, material for the residents of this city, are obviously massive and many. And over the course of the 60 minutes, we will touch on all of those. But you can call in on 021-446-0567, and she'll take your questions. And if you're in Joburg, on 011-883-0702. Alternatively, as you hear her responding, give us a sense in real time what you make of her answers on some of these tough governance questions for the city. And you can do so on Twitter. Use the hashtag Patricia on Eusebius. Mayor, I love engaging you. Thank you so much for your generosity with your time. And complimente vir sy son.
Same to you and to your listeners.
did you have
time
any
is
break
just
at all?
By so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, for us as political animals, covering the ANC's conference, I don't feel like I had much of a break. Have you had much of a break here in Cape Town?
Yes, I did have in between making sure that we navigate our way through the water crisis. It needs your full-time attention on a daily basis because the weather patterns change. We were very lucky. New Year's Eve, we actually had rain. Mm. And I said, rather the rain than the fireworks, if I must choose.
Yes.
So there are many people in Cape Town that are helping us to save water. The good news, too, is that while we have got an influx of visitors from all over the country and all over the world, Cape Town, they sort of manage our water consumption very, very well. In fact, it has not shot up very, very high, but we're able to manage that too.
Mm. Well, I wanted to talk a bit about the numbers because the crisis is so hectic. I was saying to a good friend of mine yesterday, I remember the first time I heard you speaking. I mean, you are so au fait with this crisis. At the first time I heard you give an off-the-cuff, incredible speech about everything from the science to the need for innovative solutions and cooperation between business and the city was at the opening of the SAPOA event last year, the dinner the night before the main SAPOA conference. Where are we at? Because I keep seeing posters like the one you've brought here, Day Zero. And it sounds to me like something out of one of those scary American blockbusters.
Well, where we are, Eusebius, is that as a well-run city, we also have to have a disaster plan in the event that we run out of water. So that is what we mean with Day Zero. And we will reach Day Zero when the dam levels go down to 13.5%. Then at that point, we will turn off most of the taps. We will not turn off the taps. We will reduce the pressure in poorer areas like informal settlement. But we'll turn off the taps and then at about approximately 200 sites across the city, people will have to go and collect water from there. And when you collect your water from there, you will only receive 25 liters per person per day. And at the sites, we've made in a way that even disabled people, elderly people can come and collect their water from there. But I'm very confident that we can avoid day zero.
So as we stand, if behavior from individual residents and industry do not change, when is day zero on the current trajectory?
Well, if we all remain within our 87 liters per person per day, at this stage, we might even be thinking of reducing that. And if we all make sure that we use less than 350 liters of water per day, say for a family of four, we're able to push day zero right up till the end of May. But if we don't, if we continue to use water and we continue to go over the 10,500 liters of water per month, then we'll, of course, bring those day zero closer. Mm. Now, we are currently facing with and the national minister just made an announcement on it yesterday, that the city, of course, draws some water from the dams and so does the farmers. And what has been happening is that because of the heat, the farmers, they have been drawing more water than what they are supposed or allowed to do. Mm. But that is regulated by the national government.
Okay.
So we're also going to engage with them to see if we can find that balance of, but we can avoid day zero if we all work together. But of course, there's the other part of it, Eusebius, is that we are working day and night to bring on additional water sources. We've already at Steenbras Dam, we have drilled there. We've got 10 million liters of water per day there. Atlantis Aquifer, we've got extra 9 million liters of water. At Table Mountain here, at Orinzucht, at Maltino, we're pumping another 2 million. And then, of course, we're also building two desalination plants, one at Bonmapisi and one at Strandfontein. Mm. So on a weekly basis, on a dashboard, I update Capetonians about the progress that we are making in bringing on additional water.
The experts are confusing me, and I'm not a data person, which is why I ran away from corporate into media.
Yeah.
But I see some of the experts are having debates online about, in the last 2-3 weeks, specifically over the festive season, what the trajectory has been. And the suggestion is that, in fact, we are not on target to avoid day zero because the consumption patterns are still a little bit awry. Does the city have a proper grip in terms of auditing, Mayor, where the culprits lie? Because if you take aerial photos of Cape Town, I've seen prachtige swimming pools and sprinklers here and there. How difficult is it to make sure that people comply within that 87 liters per person and other targets for businesses? From a monitoring point of view.
From the 1st of January, level 6 restriction kicked in. Mm. And what does that mean? It means that you must use less than 10,500 liters of water per month from the 1st of January. If you don't, we are then going to fit a water meter device to your house that will restrict you to 350 liters per day. And so we're also doing another campaign where we just got legal advice on it, where we are going to put we're going to call it a red dot map of Cape Town, where we're going to put a red dot against every household on a map to show that this is the household using more than the 10,500 liters of water per month.
But I had a driver complaining to me yesterday who was transporting me from the airport because he showed me this area, that area. He was surprised at the ones that are the culprits. And he said, the problem is now here, how do you square the importance of enforcing how much each resident needs to use in order to make sure that we don't reach day zero with economics? So, for example, Antipetsa Hayes in Ibuakarp is above what Aunt Mayor Pat says they must use in that household. Yeah. And then you go and you put a red dot there and a Lavort Hashem. And then it turns out that Auntie Pat in Ibuakarp is a hairdresser and she needs water for an activity. So now you're trading off self-reliance against a per-household measurement that makes sense per household, but it doesn't take into account the dynamics, because not every household will go above their threshold just because people are irresponsible. How does one deal with those things? Or I have a car wash facility that is a source of income. Now I'm suddenly told, okay, car wash, we can't use this kind of thing. But those have interesting socioeconomic implications.
Of course. No, we're very sensitive to that. I've convened a half-day summit with all the car washing associations and car washers at the transport interchange. And we actually showed them and illustrated how you can still wash your car with the waterless car wash. Okay. I went further to donate to all of the small car washers a 5 liter of that product, which they selected from the suppliers that came to display. And so we also use some of our counselors to go around to the car wash agencies, persuading them not to use water from our fire hydrants and so on. We're doing something similar with the hairdressers and with the spas, of course. You know, that is the income people derive from that. And the only thing that we are saying that you can continue with your business, you must just apply for an exemption. Come to the city of Cape Town, and even households that are more than four people in a household, it's obvious they can't survive on 350 liters per day. But please come and apply, and we will give you that exemption.
Megan tweets, I was in Cape Town over the holidays, and there were numerous golf courses being watered. From a regulation and law enforcement point of view, Mayor, I mean, you're not a law enforcement agency.
Yes.
But unfortunately, you are the mayor of a city with this kind of water crisis. How does one deal with that kind of thing, with the fact that you will still have some people who are just not team players?
Yes. With the golf courses, they are buying treated wastewater from the city. And also some of the construction companies, they are buying treated wastewater and then they use it for building purposes. So all the golf courses, we do monitor them very closely. The water that they use. So when you play golf, just make sure that you don't get catch under that water, because of course it's not 100% clean. But we give them treated, or they buy treated wastewater for watering of the golf courses. I played twice as this holiday, and immediately Clovelly, I walked around and I saw there they've got their own borehole, and there they've got their treatment plant where they treat the water. So most of the golf courses have helped us.
What is your handicap?
I'm playing off a 19. I
don't even know what that means. I just know that's the right question to ask.
Yes.
I want to ask you a final question on this theme before we take a break and go to another governance theme after the break, Mayor. You made the point, and you've made it several times, that it cannot be business as usual, that even one good seasonal rainfall year in Cape Town is not going to change the systemic crisis, that the water crisis, and it's one that afflicts seven of our nine provinces, not just Cape Town. That's why this is very South African. That it's not gonna go away. So in terms of you've outlined what you're doing now to avoid day zero, and it's an ongoing daily, day by day measurement issue. And in long term, what is the solution? This desalination, what thing, for example, is that strategically where we have to look? What is the game plan beyond staving off day zero?
Yeah. The first thing is that the whole world is affected by climate change. I think the only one that don't believe climate change exists is your famous president, Donald Trump. But the rest of the world believe that it exists. And because of climate change, we have to now look at a new normal. And the new normal is that you cannot rely just on rainwater to fill your dams. You need to look at other sources of water. And this is what you have done in the city of Cape Town. We've put away our 30-year plan that was based on the assumption that we will receive rain every winter. And we now have a plan called the new normal. Mm. Because climate change is a reality. It might be Cape Town now. We've seen, and I'm in contact with cities around the world, with Los Angeles, San Francisco. They all had these droughts. Once you come at the end of that drought, in some instances 8 years, then you have got all of those massive floods that we've seen in Texas and all of those places. So climate change has changed the whole weather patterns across the world. And we certainly are now prepared. our new normal is that we are now planning that we are in a drought situation on a permanent basis. And therefore, the lessons that we learn from here, when it gets to Joburg's turn for the droughts, they might have all the water now, we'll be able to share with them what we have done in the city of Cape Town.
20 minutes after 10, you're listening to the Mayor of Cape Town, Patricia de Lille, talking about how to deal with this permanent crisis in terms of the drought that Cape Town is experiencing, and certainly a little bit of a dovier over the last day, so it's not going to make a difference at all. That's why we need to think about some of these big innovative solutions.
Every time there's a little bit of
people
rain,
get excited,
the usage goes up.
You want to engage the mayor directly, give us a call on 021 446 0567. Oliver, I'm going to come to you first, and if you're in Johannesburg, on 011 883 0702. Remember, you can also watch this interview. We're streaming live on the Cape Talk Facebook page and on the 702 Facebook page, and plenty still to discuss with the mayor in the rest of this hour. I want to talk to her about housing, about transportation, and of course we're going to talk also about allegations against her name, which until now has been synonymous with Andrew Feinstein as the poster children when it comes to whistleblowing. So just be patient. All of these things matter if you are a resident of the city. So we're patiently working through the governance issues. We're not just here to talk politics, but we will get there. You know, this is the Eusebius MacIsaac Show.
Eusebius MacIsaac on 702 and Cape Talk.
Circulating all of this.
23 minutes after 10, hashtag Patricia on Eusebius for your questions on Twitter. Mayor, if I can ask you to put on your headphones for me, please. Then we'll take our first caller. I think it, is it Oliver or Olafir?
It's Olivia.
Olivia. I think you've been given a new name here by one of my producers. Olivia, welcome to the show. You can engage the mayor directly. Go ahead.
Thanks, Eusebius. Hi, Mayor.
Hi, morning, Olivia. Compliments for the new year.
To you too, Mayor. Thank you. I've got three questions for you, Mayor. The one is, if the water crisis is so serious, why are there so large-scale construction projects on the go? Because obviously that takes up quite a bit of water. So that's the first one. The second one is, why are all homes not fitted with water management devices, so that water is rationed now already, as opposed to when we go to day zero and we all have to queue for water? And then the last question is unrelated to the water, but my son basically travels from Strand to Cape Town on the Golden Arrow bus. I get a term ticket for R995. When he gets to Adley Street, he takes a MyCity bus to his school in Camps Bay, and that costs me R600 a month. So he travels 40 Ks on R995, but for like a 3 month or 3 month period, and then R600 over the mountain, like 4-6 kilometers for R600 a month. So I'm wondering if MyCity is going to introduce fares that are much cheaper for scholars to travel during that time. And then my final question is, if day zero comes, if you're going to queue for water as well.
Of course.
Okay, let's take each of those.
I'll take you with the last one first.
Thanks, Olivia. That's a whole buffet of questions.
Certainly, I will be queuing for water. I can assure you that. We will be making available the sites where people can collect the water from. As a leader, you must lead by example. Coming back to the large-scale constructions, yes, they because it's job creation, it's part of building, growing the economy in the Western Cape and in the city. And so we have now made treated wastewater available to construction companies. Many of them have bought big trucks, so they come in and they buy the water from us and then they use that. So it's not all of them that are using tap water. And we have engaged with the industry to try and even reduce the water usage further. The water meter devices, with the restrictions that came in on the 1st of January this year, all households now using more than 10,500 liters per month. That is an average household of 3 to 4 people. If you use more, we'll certainly be fitting a water meter device to your property. We have estimated that about 100,000 people in the city of Cape Town still use more than 10,500 litres per month. And it's a great communication campaign coming where we are actually going to persuade people and advise them how to further save water. I would like you to leave your contact details with me so that I can just make a follow-up on the Golden Arrow and My City Bus. Of course, a Golden Arrow gets subsidies from national government. They get subsidized for passengers travel on their route, whereas the city of Cape Town, I'm not quite certain right now what is the subsidy that we get. But I will get you the information, Olivia, and after the show, I'll call you back.
Thanks, Olivia. Let's go to Bramley. Peter, good morning to you.
Hello.
Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I just asked to ask the mayor, some things are not sort of tying up for me. She says that they're going to do desalination at the sea. Now, how are you going to get that water into the reticulation system, which is much higher than at the sea? And the same as wastewater that she says they're giving. How do you get wastewater from a wastewater treatment plant all the way back uphill to people? Are you going to run another pipeline? It just doesn't make sense.
Well, first on the desalination, we have selected the desalination plants to be close by where we can connect it and get the clean water straight into the reticulation site. And that is why they've only been selected at certain areas. The water treatment, it's taking place at all the city water, wastewater treatment plants, and people can go there and they come and buy the water from us and they take it away in trucks. The way cities have been built many hundreds of years ago is that all cities don't have two reticulation systems, one for wastewater and one for potable water. And that is one of the lessons that we've learned going into the future, is that we will have to build another reticulation system that can transport treated wastewater for further use by Cape Townians.
And how much will desalination cost? What will be the knock-on effect on the cost of water?
The knock-on effect of desalination is the cost is between 50 to 60 rand per cubic meter, which is much, much higher than what we currently buy underground water for and from national government. We buy it between 10 and 15 rand per cubic meter. So it's a big, big, big cost.
Okay.
Eusebius is on Twitter, at Eusebius.
We need water to live, to exist, to flourish, but we also need housing, we need transportation, we need access to opportunities in terms of income. So I do want to move on from this topic, but clearly water obviously is a big deal. So unsurprisingly, most of my Twitter feed, Mayor, is about this issue. I'm just going to squeeze in one or two more questions and I do want to move on for now. We'll have another opportunity in future to speak to Mayor Patricia de Lille. Of the volgende persoon wat die mayor gaan wees. Lali says, please ask de Lille, why are we being charged 4,000 rand for new meters and they want a drought levy as well? Surely it must be either rather than both.
The drought levy is now still in public participation process. It's not being implemented yet. And it's also subject to approval by the national minister. I checked this morning when I arrived at the office. There's still no approval from the national minister. So the public participation conclude on the 12th of January. Obviously, the cost of the meter and installing the meter must be borne by the house owner. The city, of course, subsidize water meters for people who are indigent, the poor. But anybody else who can afford to pay must pay. That is more or less the cost price of the meter.
Okay. One of the biggest legacies of our entire country, as you know better than me, witnessing and experiencing this as a young person fighting apartheid, is apartheid spatial planning. And one of the consequences of that is that we're now sitting with housing crises across the country.
Yeah.
And Cape Town is no different.
Yes.
But the way this is being handled in Cape Town, the optics are not good, literally and otherwise, Mayor. There are accusations that You have incredible gentrification going on. You have places in Cape Town, like in Woodstock, where people have incredible memories of their families living there for many, many decades and being crowded out of the market now because of the access that commercial developers have to the city to be able to develop those areas which generate revenue for the city. But you can, in the process, create a more inequitable market when it comes to housing. Mm. What do you say to people who are deeply unhappy with how the city has dealt with the housing situation?
Well, first of all, what we are determined to do, Eusebius, is to stop the urban sprawl. I think it's an indictment on all the cities across our country that very good intention by our late President Nelson Mandela, who wanted to build 1 million houses within 5 years, and we've achieved that. But it caused an urban sprawl. In fact, it took people further and further away from housing opportunities. In fact, it continued with the apartheid spatial planning. So what we are attempting to do in the city of Cape Town is that because the poor people spend at least 40% of their income on transport to and from work, is that we need to begin to look at how can we locate affordable housing close to public transport corridors. So the transport lead as to where development must take place. Not how it's happening now, where houses are just being planted far away out of the city and then people must find their way in into the city. So we have signed an agreement with 20 social housing companies where we will make, and with other private sector companies, where we will make the city-owned land available so that we can build affordable housing, so that we can integrate our cities, so that we can bring diversity to our cities. And Cape Town started last year by making city-owned land available in Woodstock, in Salt River, in the city center. And we've got more pieces of land that we are going to make available. Now, we can't do this alone. We do need the help of the private sector. And so the gentrification that you're talking about, especially in Woodstock and Salt River, is a reality. And we can't sort of stop the private market. But what we can do to balance our gentrification is to use city-owned land in those areas to build affordable housing so that young people can stay and live close to the city. And this is what we are doing.
But in areas like Salt River and in Woodstock, I mean, that's where you see a lot of the social justice organizations be incredibly unhappy.
Yeah.
And if you are a tourist, you spend a weekend there going through the markets. I mean, it's a bit like, and Joburg is no different. That's why I'm saying it's not unique to Cape Town, but that is called comfort to poor people. It's like going to Maboneng or going into the Braamfontein area.
Yeah.
As lekker vir die ryk mense om te kom speel vir 'n paar euro per Saturday oggend. But the truth of the matter is that silently you're actually displacing the very people whose lives have been embedded there for a long time.
Yeah.
And now it's like a fancy place
for
your hipsters with a bit of money to come and buy a lovely new flat.
Yes. What is happening is that once with gentrification is that once the area and the value of the property start going up, of course the rates, it's also going up that must be paid to the city of Cape Town. And that is when people have been living there for 30, 40 years cannot afford to pay those rates and then have to sell or then have to move out.
Mm.
And some people do sell by choice. Because maybe they don't have their children in the house anymore. It's only the mother and father left. And that is also part of the market dynamics. But what we do have to look into is that what can we do as a city to support the people who can't afford the high rates in those areas? And that's why we've got a rates rebate policy. People must just apply and there will be help for them.
Okay.
Yeah.
22 minutes before 11. If you want to engage the mayor, give us a call on 021-446-0567 and in Johannesburg on 011-883-0702. We've been speaking to her about the water crisis, the housing as well. There are many different stakeholders. You have different needs. You have different ideas about what she's doing well and what it is that she is not doing so well. So this is your chance to engage your mayor. You can also tweet us your questions. Thanks for those of you who are doing so already on Twitter using the hashtag Patricia on UC. CBS. And in fact, I want to take a tweet, which will lead us to the next big theme, Mayor, that I really want to discuss with you in relation to transportation. It is so expensive, poverty, the world over, because the little bit of wages or salary that poor people get in cities that have legacies of spatial planning that is colonial or apartheid spatial planning is that, in fact, a bigger percentage of their wages go to things that you and I don't have to worry about as middle-class residents of our cities. And transportation is no different. So here's one from someone who says, I wish that the mayor can address the question, Eusebius, on the fares when it comes to my city. It's very expensive, and yet a large number of its users in the CBD are, for example, domestic workers. And that's a massive issue, and you see it on the trains. I mean, any image of trains transporting workers from the north to the CBD to the southern suburbs, and then you have to look at the fees. And if you have one day when the trains are not working and you have people who can't use the same seasonal tickets because the intermodal transport is not yet perfect in any of our cities, it immediately takes away that week's chicken for Sunday lunch.
I can agree with you 100%. It's exactly what's happening to people. It's a struggle to get to work because Metro Rail has failed the people. And therefore, you cannot have an effective and efficient public transport system unless you put a rail and road together. And so because the rail is not functioning properly, a lot of people have left rail and are on the roads, and that leads to further congestion in our city. And that's why we had made a proposal to Metro Rail, which is part of PRASA and national government. How can we work together to pull rail back to what it used to be and get actually more people to go back onto rail? The city's responsibility is that, and I've inherited a plan that was designed in 2010 during the World Cup, where cities around South Africa was faced with a bus rapid transport plan. A lot of those projections, all good intention, could never work out that way. Public transport is subsidized all over the world. And if we think that we're ever going to make a profit out of public transport, and you don't consider our apartheid spatial planning, where people still have to travel these long distances, it's never going to work. That's why we turned it around in the city of Cape Town. We said, we're going to have a transport development authority, and that where we build, whatever we do will be led by transport. And so through our transport strategy that we've been started to implement, we have rolled out the My City bus service. And now, in the past 5 years, we've got 60,000 passengers per day on the My City bus. What we have done so far is that we have made free rides available to the unemployed. Anybody who's unemployed can use the My City bus. You get a card, we load some money for you in there, and at least you're able to go and look for a job. And we are looking into the policy as to how we can extend that to maybe to scholars, to the elderly, but it's a very costly affair. Now, we are underway now to extend the service from Khayelitsha and Mitchell's Plain to Claremont and to Wynberg. That is going to connect 1.4 million people. But
all you have fares differentiation is the question that I think was asked on Twitter. Because it is good to have these loaded cards for someone who's unemployed.
Yes.
Because if you can't get to the city, you don't even have opportunity to ask someone owning a restaurant as a vergue. So I understand that. That's fantastic. Yeah. But of course, South Africa also has a problem of working class people who are poor.
Yes. No, I agree with you.
Because they've got to stretch their wages. So where is the comfort if that domestic worker who's spending a lot of money on the My City fare is paying a large percentage of her wages on the My City system? Yes. It's not much comfort to her that her cousin, who is unemployed, doesn't have to pay.
Yes, I agree with you. And we've certainly set ourselves a goal. But by the year 2032, we want to have a city where all people have have got access to public transport that's affordable. But we have to work towards it. And that's why I'm saying that we are now looking at our policy. We've extended it to the unemployed. And it's costing us 6.6 million rand per year to make that facility available to the unemployed. We're now looking at who else in the indigent fold of the city do need that kind of assistance, like, for instance, the domestic workers that you mentioned. And as we go on, we will certainly make further announcements around it.
Okay. 17 minutes before 11. Guys, Lundi, a couple of people have tweeted this. Is it by design that you are eventually talking about the allegations of corruption faced by the mayor? Okay, we'll take a break and we're going to talk about these things. But honestly, let me say this, because you've missed my voice over the radio, I'm sure. I'm not scared to ask any politician a question, whether it be Donald Trump, whether you're talking about Theresa May or Patricia de Lille. They are just human beings and they have to be accountable to you and me. We're going to get there. Oh. Please think. Use the brain power between your headspace, between your ears, Lundi, and think. For poor people, what matters right now are many, many things. Not just the fate of Mayor Patricia de Lille as a politician. They want to know, can I afford the My City system? What's going to happen? Will I ever again be able to take a bath in Cape Town? A tourist who might think this is not a tourist destination. These things matter. So as much as it titillates you to get all these personality-driven squabbles type of questions about the ANC, about the DA, the material conditions of a city under which residents live matter. And that is why I've spent 40 minutes on it. And I make no apologies for that. If you want to have gotcha journalism, I'm sure you can find it on another platform. But on the other side of this, I will ask her about what you all want to hear about, which, of course, is some of these allegations against her. 13 minutes before 11, we're in conversation with Mayor Patricia de Lille, and we've had a wide-ranging conversation about transportation, about housing, and about the water crisis. Mayor, are you going to be mayor for long?
Well, I've said it publicly many times. If there's anybody anywhere in South Africa, in the city of Cape Town, that has got any proof of corruption, that I have actually benefited 1 cent from the city's money, they must please bring that evidence, because I'm prepared to subject myself to any investigation. You see, because I've made a comprehensive submission to the federal executive of the DA, relating to the complaints against me. Now, the DA's constitution makes provision for a fair and just handling of an internal matter, also relating to performance, and also our country constitution has also well-established law on what is fair and equitable processes. So what I expect is that my submission to the federal executive will be fully considered by FedEx, and that the constitutional and common law principles of fair and due process will be followed in doing so. And like I've done yesterday, I've opened up my house. I showed the media, this is what I paid for. This is the proof. I've opened up my banking account to show people what I've paid for. If there's any proof of any corruption against me,
Okay, let's get to some of the substantive claims, though.
Yeah.
Firstly, was it ever brought to your attention over the course of last year, last year, that as a result of the way in which the MyCity bus service has been operating, that in fact there had been a loss, which is tentatively, at least on in terms of Craig Kesson's affidavit, put it around 43 million rand or so, and that there is prima facie evidence that in fact there needs to be an investigation that needs to take place, because Melissa Whitehead might have been implicated in some of the irregular expenditures or fraud that accounts for why it is that that figure had surfaced. Did Craig Kesson ever come to you and say, Mayor Patricia de Lille, here is a prima facie case of some of our colleagues sadly seeming to be implicated in corruption?
Mr. Craig Kesson did not discover any of the losses. In fact, the losses was discovered by Melissa Whitehead. Melissa Whitehead approached the city manager to investigate and start a forensic investigation. It was started because this all the city's cash points where people buy the My City bus cards and where they exchange money is done by an outside company. And so this company employees, what they did when you come and buy a card, they will load the money onto your card. But before the money can register on the system, they pull the plug and then they pocketed the money. So we discovered the first loss, the city, at 6 million. So it's not Mr. Craig Kesson like he claimed in his affidavit. In fact, the investigation is still ongoing. PricewaterhouseCoopers has been appointed to quantify further losses. And the last time I was informed about it was that the company acknowledged liability for this. And I don't want to go into the merits or the demerits of this case because it must still be tested. His version versus the version of Melissa Whitehead. And I think we need to wait for the outcome of that.
Well, we don't really, because the sub judice rule, as you know, is a whistleblower,
yeah,
as our most famous whistleblower in this country, that the sub judice rule often gets abused. It's being abused currently by some of your colleagues, by the way, in the DA. You don't want to be transparent, but then accuse the ANC of not being transparent when a senior member has these clouds over their head. And it sometimes gets abused by the people themselves who are implicated. All sub judice means is don't mess with the administration of justice. But if as you're used to it again, you can tell it here and in a court, and then you're not breaking the law by speaking to me. So I want to get back to the issue. The crux of the crux of the matter is you and Craig were BFFs. You co-authored a book together. Yeah. You love this guy. Yeah. You bring him. You help him to try and clear, interpret corporate government. In fact, he gets an additional title. And then after his probationary period, he gets affirmed. So you have a love affair with this guy, you, as it were. you praise him publicly for his principles and his work. So firstly, is Craig Kesson a man of integrity still?
Well, Mr. Craig Kesson invoked the Public Disclosures Act as a protection mechanism, and he also invoked the Whistleblowers Act. Now, if you look at the Protection of Disclosures Act that as amended in August 2017, it does say that if you are not telling the full truth under that act, it actually becomes a criminal offense. So those are the things that need to be tested of these allegations against Mr. Kesson. And I know that people have laid charges according to that. So there, what I'm saying is that the law must take its course now. The allegations need to be tested in an open court of law. And this is how we are developing legal precedents with all of these good laws that we have. And I look forward to this because I want to see what how far the Protection of Disclosures Act go in terms of protecting so-called whistleblowers.
But in paragraph...
But my friendship with him... we've worked together as professionals. I still respect him. We have worked for the past 5-6 years together.
Is his professional integrity intact as we speak?
Well, that is for the investigation to decide.
Think?
I think that
as mayor,
I think that it's premature to come to a conclusion that he is now this Mr. Clean, and that you know in processing.
Do you think he's clean?
I think what I'm saying that he has done nothing the way he handled this matter. You know, people seem to think that clean means that if you are clean, you have not corrupt. Corruption actually means that you have to have put money in your pocket. And that's why I'm very eager that before we come to any conclusions, whether it's the DA or whether it is Bowman's or whoever is going to investigate these allegations, let's follow due process to arrive at an outcome.
You're going too fast for me.
Yeah.
The Bowman stuff, we'll leave for another day.
Yes.
John Steenhuisen's mysterious report that they don't want to release, we'll leave for another day. What we do have public evidence of is your relationship with this incredible guy who is basically meant to be the city's big anti-corruption czar. He cleans stuff up. You co-author a book together. His name is Craig Kesson. I've known him since he was a lighty. You've known him professionally since he arrived in Cape Town. You praise him publicly as a person of integrity.
Yes.
And I'm asking you a straightforward question as a mayor. And the reason why you can't escape the question is because given how important your role and title is in this city, the people listening who are residents of Cape Town must unambiguously know whether a civil servant like Craig Kesson, being paid for the incredibly important cleaning up job that he has, should be trusted. Yes or no?
Well, but you see, you want me to do exactly what the detectives are doing to me now. I am being found guilty and I'm being smeared as if I am corrupt without any due process being followed. And I think Craig Kesson, on the other hand, these allegations must all be tested. Then we make a decision when we see the outcome, whether he is a man of integrity or not. And I'm not trying to dodge the question.
But you are. Can I tell you why? And my apologies for interrupting. I tell you why you are dodging it. Because if we were talking about Craig Kesson having come up with a report just about Melissa that doesn't involve you, then you are actually right as the big political principle of the entire structure to say, Vahabiki. But I'm asking you the question about Craig for a very specific reason. Because he, in his affidavit, and I'm going to take you to one of the paragraphs in a second, one of the people that he says, in fact, were covering up for Melissa or potentially had done something criminal is you. Yeah. And he says, in fact, that you had, quote unquote, in paragraph 24, when I tried to present the attorney's opinion to the mayor, Patricia DeLille, in a meeting between the two of us on the 31st of August 2017, after I became aware of the report, the mayor did not wish to receive it and said that we needed to make the issue go away. Now, I can net where for word for you, and then we'll leave it there for today, and we'll talk about it some more in the future. Firstly, did you ever say to Craig Kesson, we must make this, quote unquote, go away?
I never said that, and I will repeat it in an open court of law again.
Now, if you never said that, why are you still unclear about whether this man has integrity? Because if he's a lichtbek, then why can't you say so?
Let me give you an example where I've got the actual proof. Mm. And that example is that in this affidavit of Mr. Craig Kesson, he makes a point that I gave a disc containing 5 years forensic reports. I have given it to the leader of the DA. That he says under oath in an affidavit. Then the Bowmans went to go and investigate that allegation. Bowmans then say that I have admitted that I gave it to the leader of the DA. So Bowmans is quoting what he said. I've been able to prove to both Bowmans and to Mr. Craig Kesson that I did give a disc to the leader by the leader confirming that himself. So in that respect, Mr. Craig Kesson and Bowmans are liars.
So if
and
Mr. Craig Kesson is a liar,
I'm putting Bowmans to terms to say,
and
if
I saw
you
that
don't
letter.
Correct your report, I will certainly go take your report on a review. And there are several other factual errors in the Bowman's report. So you can't in general take a person's character. But in this instance, I can say what he said in that affidavit, it is a lie.
Okay, final question, then we're going to leave it there for today, Mayor. James Self is interestingly changing the yardstick. And between James and John, they have a very, very careful legalistic way of strategizing as politicians, which makes them good politicians, effective politicians. They're no longer saying that yesterday's FedEx meeting was about is Antipet guilty of criminal behavior or not. James has now said, we are discussing whether we have confidence in her politically. And here come a because they don't have to have you found guilty in a court of law in order to ask you to resign, because the threshold in the political arena is simply, do we still have political confidence in you? If the DA says, we're not saying you're guilty as a matter of criminal law, Mayor Patricia DeLille, but we no longer at a subjective level have political confidence in you, will you recognize, a la Thabo Mbeki, that even if objectively you're not a criminal, when your party says we don't have political confidence in you, then you must resign?
Well, political confidence, whatever it's supposed to mean. But I think where you test political confidence is at the ballot box. We've just a year ago went through a 2016 elections. And with my name and the DA's name on the ballot paper, we've been able to garner 66.6% of the vote. That to me is a confidence level. If there are certain people, because we are all politicians, who've got any political problems with me, there are internal processes in the DA where we can discuss it.
But the bottom line is that a political judgment does not have to meet the evidential burden of a court of law. What if John or James stand up and said, Patricia, don't give us the results of the last election. You've had a great innings. Right now, we have collectively decided we just don't want you as mayor anymore. Will you walk?
Well, I will certainly not walk, because I owe the voters of the city of Cape Town a lot more than that. But let me say you this. I fought for these rights, Eusebius. We've got a constitution that makes it very clear that there need to be, and we've established equitable common law constitutional principles. Those days where somebody can say, I feel I don't like you, Eusebius, because I don't put this, it's over. That's Baskop mentality. What we have today is a constitution that I'm very proudly can say I was party to writing that constitution. And okay. I know my rights, and I will not allow my rights to be violated by anyone.
Thank you for answering all my cheeky questions, and I look forward to the next one.
Thank you
for coming in, Mayor.
Thank you so much.
Wearing many colors today, both orange and blue. And the question is whether she will be blue or orange the next time we engage each other.